Welcome to Take Note. This is our podcast about keeping a notebook, paying attention, parenting, and everything else that captures our attention throughout the course of a day or maybe even a week. I'm here with my friend of a couple of decades now, Adam. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing great, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Things are moving right along.
Fantastic.
In this life of ours. let's get right into it. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm gonna say, what do you got? And when I ask you that, for our new listeners, that means, Adam, what have you written down in your notebook in the last week or so that caught your eye and needed capturing with pen and paper, or pencil and paper, as the case may be?
Ted, I wrote, took the boys for donuts while Jennifer slept. Before we entered the donut shop, I warned the boys not to go in screaming and touching the glass like at least our youngest sometimes does. And they were so well behaved in the donut shop that we made the dad next to us, who was with his two kids, who was also allowing his wife to sleep, I think feel a little self-conscious. Especially because while my boys were sitting there, and this never happens, while my boys were sitting there eating their donuts, drinking their milk nicely, the dad walked in singing an invented donut song with his kids. So I was pretty proud of that, but I felt better once the kids finished their donuts and started, like, being a little wilder and chatting up the other kids a little bit, because I felt like I've been in that position where my kids are the, you know, quote, wild ones, and the other kids seem super well behaved. And then I wrote, on the way home from the donut shop, I explained to the kids the expanding universe of Hallelujah covers, and I think they did not appreciate that. I don't know, some horrible version of Hallelujah was on at the donut shop. I couldn't even identify it. So on the drive home, we listened to the original. We listened to, of course, the Jeff Buckley. And we listened to a few others that I think there's one from the movie Sing. And I told the kids that maybe they remembered that from having seen the American Idol with zoo animal cartoon. I don't know if they were all zoo animals. I apologize to the characters. But yes. So they listened to quite a few versions of Hallelujah, and I'm hoping that sticks with them. Ted, what do you got?
Quick, before we move on, I'm gonna quickly psychoanalyze you and say that your punishment that you meted out upon your children for forcing you to be the better dad and putting that guilt on your head was to subject them to this Hallelujah breakdown analysis of yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think I at least did a good job. I think you're right. I'm going to say that in my defense, and I know that you were not actually, you know, prosecuting me, I did a good job of not trying to tell them this version is better than this version. I asked them what differences they heard in the two versions, or three versions.
All part of making their punishment just all the more excruciating.
Listen, if they had listened to this, if they were listening to any of those songs before I think the OC used it, I think that was the end, right? Like, when they used it in the West Wing in, like, 1998 season 3 finale, that was one of the first times that you heard that song being used in a television show, and it seemed like a great choice. Then, you know, a couple years later, a few years later, it's on the OC, I think.
I'm gonna do you one better and say that they do that song every season of the singing competition shows.
Gosh.
Somebody bust that one out, and every single time it's another nail in the coffin.
Yeah. Yep.
Of the tune.
Of Leonard Cohen, presumably in a coffin.
You couldn't. As we all will be one day.
Absolutely.
In a big old giant wooden coffin.
Yep, but only his will be nailed shut with covers of a wonderful song that he wrote. Did that get too dark? Ted, what do you got?
Oh, I'm going to lighten things up. My 4-year-old son, as we were packing up the SUV to go do God knows what on a Saturday, some, you know, activity that required putting on coats and wrangling the kids as we were going to the car. He looked around and said, does anybody need any guns?
Ted, do you have an SUV or do you have what they try to sell you as a crossover SUV?
Oh, it's a pure crossover.
Oh, that's a bunch of nonsense. That's just, they call, I think they're crossover SUVs for people who don't want to admit they've purchased a SUV.
You're saying I should drive a Hummer?
No, I have no problem with what you're driving. I just, the term crossover just to me seems like, you know, there's a certain segment of the market that doesn't really want to feel like they're ready to drive an SUV. Let's, this is an SUV though. How are we going to sell it? Let's call it a crossover SUV. Makes my
I think
skin
that's
crawl.
True. Instead of crossover, they should call it terrible gas mileage and not quite as much storage space in the back as you would think.
Yeah, that would sell it.
And no trunk.
No trunk.
No trunk, also no storage space.
No trunk SUV.
Slightly elevated. No trunk SUV. It's the new detective series on CBS this fall. All right, so we're gonna dive into some. I mean, we're calling them topics, but really, I think what we've put together is an amazing package of thrilling conversation points to jump around to back and forth. And
let's call them crossover topics.
So I'm gonna go from a note that I took in my notebook, and I'm gonna jump into my first topic. So prepare yourself for some serious podcasting gymnastics. But I was in the Goodwill thrift shopping recently, and one of the employees was troubleshooting something with a shopper, and I think it was an appliance that the shopper wanted to test out or something. And she said, oh, yeah, bring it over here. We'll put some power to it. And I thought, wow, put power to it. That's kind of the most amazing turn of phrase I've ever heard. which is to say, I wanted to talk about thrift shopping. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it, to me, it, I don't know, ties into the, like we talk about the analog. Somewhere in my head, I link thrift shopping and reusing stuff with other impulses to, I don't know, do things that are not particularly digital or to, I don't know, address the physical world in a slightly out of the ordinary way, which is kind of how I see thrift shopping. Like, I mostly shop for clothes and books at the Goodwill, but I love to get in there and find a bunch of work shirts that are perfectly good. And, I don't know, repurpose them.
How are you repurposing them? Like a quilt?
By, I don't know, washing them and wearing them,
okay.
I guess.
All right.
I don't know. I don't have any amazing insights into it, but it's something that's interesting to my brain. And I think even the process when you get in there of assessing the sort of quality of something, like the quality of clothing as you're shuffling through lots of different fairly random things, that when your eye or your hand as you're you know, say shuffling through the hangers, kind of senses something different about a piece of clothing that draws your attention to it and causes you to kind of go through that little investigative process of, you know, pulling like a funny looking shirt off the rack and checking the tags and trying to quickly ascertain where it comes from, or if maybe it's got some interesting, unique backstory that makes it stand out from the rest, or some detail that speaks to some quality, like, you know, level of quality. I think the big one I tend to look for when I thrift shop is the made in the USA
on the
tag, which is always kind of a first indicator that you've got something that not only is probably from a different, it's either from a different era or it's from, you know, a contemporary era that someone has actually put some extra attention to.
I think that's actually a really good little tip you've got there. I like when I'm in a used bookstore I found it became helpful to always have just a few things that I was always looking for, because otherwise I would spend forever in a used bookstore and I would buy too many books that I wasn't going to read. So I would all, for a while, I was looking for any Pinter plays, any Ashbery collections, poetry, and I forget what the third, there was a third one. And they were things that tended to be hard to find. And so it would kind of cut short my shopping trip, but not in an unsatisfying way. I'd still browse a bit, but oh, they don't have one of the three things I'm looking for. And I really like that way of kind of narrowing down everything in the thrift store by looking for the Made in the USA tag. I mean, almost like making a little game of it, but a useful game of it. I like that a lot.
Oh, it's definitely a sport. And you have to enjoy that sportiness of it.
I don't know if it's definitely a sport. It's arguably
sorry.
A sport.
For those who enjoy it, they enjoy it because of the element, the sporting element of it. And I think you make a really good point about having a focus in that kind of setting, because I found that for thrift shopping or for clothes shopping, I have to do the exact same thing. It's either I'm looking for a rugby shirt, or I'm looking for some Patagonia camping shorts, which actually I've been surprisingly successful over the years of finding those. And Patagonia is a really great company to thrift shop for, because they actually openly encourage you to either sell their clothes on eBay or to buy, you know, to reuse their clothes, which I would say is unique to anything I've ever seen from a company. But thrift shopping for clothes, it's partly about finding the tags, but it is about narrowing your search and having a bit of a mission, and that makes it more fun too, because you're hunting. But I've found that my favorite section in the men's clothes is there's always kind of a, you know, you got your button-down shirts and then your polo shirts and your short-sleeve shirts and your T-shirts, but there's always a section for, like, the shirts that don't fit into any other category, like weird, you know, sweaters and like, turtlenecks always end up in this section, and, like, those kind of three-quarters baseball shirts. That is my favorite section of the whole shebang, because you just always find those weird things like I don't know, that are the most interesting because they don't fall into any particular category. The Gap. I think I saw a old school 90s era Gap baseball three-quarter shirt. It didn't fit me. Actually, I was standing next to I was standing next to some young guy, some young slim and trim guy, and I said, "Oh, hey!" And I almost never do this, but I was like, "Dude, there's a super cool Gap shirt right there. Too small for me, but just, you know." And he was like, "Oh, yeah, okay." And then he got to it, and he was like, "Oh, you mean this one?" And I was like, "Yeah, dude." But I love that section because it's almost it's just, you're sort of like the weird, their inability to categorize a certain component of men's clothing makes it always the most interesting section.
I'm going to ask a naive thrift shopping question. Is this a section in every Goodwill, or is this just a section in your Goodwill, as far as you know?
I think it's in every Goodwill. And there's a couple, like, the thing, like, with thrift shopping, I've never gone to the next level, like the sort of Jesse Thorne put this on. If you haven't checked out that blog, you should. It's a great men's style blog, but also a lot of the thrifting ethos runs throughout it. But I don't go to thrift stores that are sort of outside the Goodwill circle, honestly, at this point. I just don't really have time. But every Goodwill, I think, has that. They're all organized pretty much in the same way. So they're all going to have that kind of offbeat section in the men's wear.
Huh.
Let's jump ahead. I just wanted to get that off my chest because I love thrift shopping. And I was going to say one more thing that you made me think of or that I thought of in the course of
Who's to say who made who think of it? Go right ahead.
Where do thoughts come from, really? Who knows? A question for the philosophers. In the idea of limiting yourself, right, and taking a certain satisfaction out of limiting your scope, I really honestly feel like Field Notes and even probably Baron Fig and the brands that we tend to circulate around in Blackwing, they are a way of getting into stationery, but also not becoming overwhelmed by the whole universe of this stuff. I mean, one of my least favorite things to do from a stationery standpoint is like to stare at a big old shelf full of stationery from every random brand with all kinds of prints and every different size and different papers and different quality. Like, I cannot stand that.
It's tough because sometimes you know what you want and you know what you're looking for, and then other times you want to discover.
I guess I just want to discover less and less in the stationery world because, I don't know, I think I've convinced myself that most products that aren't brand forward tend to be kind of mediocre at this point, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
Like if you've got a cover with a cool mountain range and you're an odd size, it's probably because it's the Target brand, or it's probably because it's not as good, so you're just kind of banking on this sort of aesthetic side of things. I don't know.
People don't want weird mountains. This whole conversation sort of reminds me of something that I was thinking of, which is we are in the moment of Marie Kondo and the tidying up show on Netflix and her previous books, which we may have talked about the books, I don't know, last year. And it occurred to me, first off, the show, the little reality show on Netflix is good. It's weird. It's not like a usual... It's a little bit like a normal reality show. She goes in people's houses. It's ridiculous for me on this show to describe a much more popular entertainment product. Anyways, it occurred to me that...
Take Note is where I come to learn about the latest Netflix.
Yeah, okay. But it did...
No, but I'm totally with you. I'm familiar. I'm on board. I'm feeling you. Keep going.
I know that you aren't buried in pocket notebooks, but I think that maybe, like me, you have too many pencils. I also have too many pocket notebooks. And it seems to me, as silly as that whole does the spark joy thing can feel, and actually we've done it in our house, and it doesn't feel that silly, and we got rid of a lot of clothes, but I think I should do it with the pencils, and I think I should do it maybe with the notebooks, and I don't have to throw them out. But one thing I did this December is I sent a lot of pencils and a lot of notebooks to people who maybe wanted to trade me one thing for one notebook, and instead I sent them four or five notebooks. And I've lessened my load, lightened my load. I don't know. I've got fewer things, and it feels good. And it seems like this spark joy thing in the stationery world could be a really it could be a very useful way of only having the things that you really want to have.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. And I think, I think you could have a certain stationary version of that where you say, okay, maybe it's not spark joy. Maybe it's, will I use this in the next 6 months? Is this even, you know, or you could also say, Will the joy that it would bring me to send this to somebody else outweigh the joy, even if it does spark joy? Will I get more out of it by seeing someone else enjoy it?
Yep. Yeah.
And now I think the risk, in a sense, which is a low risk and a ridiculous risk, but are you just offloading your surplus onto somebody else by sending it to them? Obviously, you don't have to worry about, you know, it's not up to you to decide if somebody else has too many or not.
I'll say this, which I haven't heard anybody else say this yet, but I'm sure that it's out there. There really is something about opening your closet and in it only having clothes that you're happy to wear. It really does feel fantastic. And I was just thinking about opening that pencil drawer and only having things in there that you'd be happy to pick up and use, which is not to say that any extra pencil, it's not that you dislike it. It's just, if it's, how many do you need? And is it going to maybe feel magical to open it up and only find things that you'd be very, very happy to put in your hand?
Well, and I think the challenge of our current moment, and really, honestly, the brilliance of the marketing of the companies that we're talking about, is that they do a great job of convincing us that they're going to spark some joy, and that if only we could get our hands on these things, then the joy will be sparked. And I, to me, it's the process of saying, you know, it really feels like this. I'm gonna be elated when I get my hands on this. But let me just remind myself of the last couple times when I got this excited, and maybe it was a few days. And it's certainly fun to talk about things and get them in your hands and share. But at the end of the day, the thing that seemed like it was going to bring a lot of joy 3 months ago is the thing that I've totally eschewed in favor of this new thing that's going to bring me some joy, like, say, a pencil that simulates the dirt of Mars on its outside that I'm currently excited about but haven't yet managed to pull the trigger on.
Well, you know...
And maybe I won't, because maybe I haven't even gotten through my... exciting pencils from a year and a half ago.
It's that whole, it's that whole mail day thing where people are so excited at their new stationery that showed up in the mail that they're posting photos of what they received in the mail that day. And, that's right. That's like that kind of becomes the moment. And then the using it doesn't become the moment. It's almost as though, for the amount of joy we're getting out of these things, just for the people that have, where they have more than they can use, really, it's, your joy is really just that moment, and then it diminishes from that point on.
Oh, without question, yeah. Right? I think, so in terms of giving things away, I think part of the hang-up, for me and maybe universally for enthusiasts in the stationery world, is will the person I'm giving this to appreciate it as much as I do? And I think, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, you know, if I give this to a class, if I give these fancy Blackwing pencils to a classroom full of kids, does that, like, am I good with that? That's a bad example because I would have no idea how to do that, and I don't know why I would do that. But like, okay, let me say, if I give them to my sister, who doesn't care about pencils as far as I know. If you do, hey, give me a call. My younger sister, my older sister's a famous bookstore owner. Of course, she cares about pencils.
I would give your younger sister some pencils. That's just. Aside from the audience of the show and every, you know, and making an entertaining podcast, I'd give your sister some pencils. I think she's badly.
But I'd be concerned that she was going to appreciate them, and then I'd want them back, maybe. Or
no, she's your younger sister. You just take them back.
Well, that's a good point. I'm gonna demand a key to her home when I let her borrow the pencils, just in case.
Just
an alarm code.
Just when you give them to her, like with a nice little card, and tell her how much she means to you, and tell her that if the pencils don't mean as much to her as they mean to you, you will expect them to be returned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Perfect solution. other things that existing in the physical world, and not only the world of the mind. I'm on this kick. I read somewhere. And I'm going to need to take note, general counsel, to do some work to make sure that I'm not fibbing when I say this or when
I have
quoted,
not
but...
paid the take note general counsel legal fees. Just so tread lightly. I'm not sure if we can get our general counsel to review this.
Duly noted. I read somewhere that streaming video services like Amazon, for example, when you buy a movie or a TV show, and you know you have it downloaded and you supposedly quote own it unquote, they can in fact, if their service goes under or if their some contract of theirs expires, remove that thing that you've paid full price for from circulation, and so you and there's nothing you can do about it. There's some contract where you can't watch it anymore because they can just do that, which was of course appalling. And maybe I'll try and find a link to it if Patterson and Perkins and Peterson Esquire don't get back to me in a reasonable amount of time. I might try and find the article, put it in the show notes. But I was appalled by this idea, and it brought up this feeling in my bones of almost like digital angst. Like, wait, what do I really own? What does it mean to own something if I can buy it, a digital version of it, and then that can just be revoked? And so I just made a decision in my head. I'm going to buy physical DVDs of my kind of like the films that I treasure the most, which is a relatively small grouping. It's mostly Wes Anderson movies. And that's where I'm starting talking about limiting my scope. I'm starting with Wes Anderson movies. In fact, I was at Target tonight shopping. I love shopping after hours. That's one of my, as you know, one of my great pleasures.
Yes. Kids
go to bed. I'm hitting the bricks.
Shopping after hours. A Ted Walker pleasure.
I saw a copy of Isle of Dogs by Wes Anderson, which I saw in the movie theater miraculously. I grabbed it. $15. Physical DVD. It's mine forever. Can't take that away from me. I can hold it in my hands. I can unplug my PlayStation from the internet and still fire up that movie whenever I want. So I'm having a moment of kind of a return to the sense of ownership that comes with the physical object.
Well, Ted, I have no objection with anything you're saying, but
thank you. Are you our general counsel? Because that's what it's. You've got no objections.
I have what may be a metaphor, certainly a mixed metaphor, if it's a metaphor. Right now, I am like of the moment this episode. There is a internet meme going around that you may not be aware of because you quit Facebook, where people are posting their profile photos from 2009 and their profile photo from 2019. And there is a delightful theory that I don't think anyone really believes, but that I saw on Wired, but it's not originally from Wired. The person that put it together delighted in the idea that if you were a large internet, I don't know, if you were Facebook or whatever, and you needed to update your facial recognition algorithm in such a way that it could recognize aging, that perhaps you would put forward a meme to have people post photos of themselves exactly 10 years apart so that computers could learn what aging looks like or how aging affects a face.
Wow.
Yes. Now, yeah. I don't think anyone really believes it. It's just like a delightful kind of sci-fi theory. And it occurs to me that if you were a major movie studio, you might write your contracts with streaming movie or digital movie providers that if they were to go under, they couldn't provide copies that would last an eternity with the customers who bought them. And then you might suggest to the people of the internet that this was not a great way to own your the entertainment you loved, and perhaps you should go back to buying the physical things that you all stopped buying about 5 years ago.
You're saying I've been a part of an elaborate ruse.
Well, I think that's the nice way of saying it.
13. But why, in that model, what would they stand to gain from having me buy the physical?
Well, company? I think isn't the idea is
it's much easier for them to sell.
They would be trying to get someone to buy the things multiple times, which is at first, which is what these companies have actually been doing for many years. Wow, I sound crazy. But, you know, one of the reasons that they re-release CDs and remaster them again and again is to get the catalog albums to be purchased over and over and over again to continue to create revenue from those. So this is a way.
I'll tell you what, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'm taking a stand. I own Kong Skull Island on Amazon Prime, and I'll be damned if I'm going to buy a physical copy of that thing, too. So you're on watch, Amazon.
Amazon.
You're on watch.
All right. Well, Ted, this has been great. Let's do it again next week.
I want to let our audience know there will be a CD version of this episode available for $9.99. Just head over to takenote.space. That's a URL, if you can believe it. We are on Twitter at twitter.com/takenotepod. Shoot us a message. What's your analog pursuit? You like to thrift? Let us know. Are you on board my slightly crazy DVD theory and Adam's far crazier George Orwell mental manipulation schemes? Let us know, and we'll talk to you soon.